This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. Last week, Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan, caused a stir when he joked about the longevity of his company in contrast with the China's Communist Party. Now, he immediately walked back on these comments before any backlash from the CCP, apologizing not once, but twice. Now, this incident is a curious example of the tightrope that foreign businesses have to walk in order to do business in China. So joining me on the show today to better understand the dynamics at play is Richard McGregor, senior fellow at the Lowy Institute. He was also the former bureau chief in Beijing and Washington, D.C. for the Financial Times. So he has a really great grasp of the geopolitics going on between U.S. and China at the moment. Richard, thanks for joining me today. Good morning. Now, JP Morgan's Jamie Dimon is no stranger to controversy. He's made other spicy comments in the past. But the speed and scale of his mea culpa to China following his recent comments did raise some eyebrows. What do you make of this story? Is it simply a case of a business leader putting his foot in his mouth?
Well, in a sense it is, yes. I mean, as you say, you use the word spicy. He's made lots of spicy comments in the past. He's made lots of political comments in the past. He rarely apologizes. I don't think you'll ever find a statement from Jamie Dimon on the record, for example, apologizing for the role of American investment banks in the financial crisis about 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. But within a single day of making a joke, and let's face it, it was a joke about the ruling Communist Party in China, he apologized, as you said, not once, not twice. And that tells you all you need to know, because if he wants to expand in China, and he does, he won't be making jokes like that, I think.
Hmm. And we have seen the CCP take action against prominent Chinese businessmen that have been critical of the government. And I think Alibaba founder Jack Ma comes to mind. But are foreign bosses held to the same standards by the party?
You know, it's a little bit different, I think. I mean, I think if you're inside China, there's all manner of companies at different times or business people who might be complaining about this or that regulation. You know, and many of the top businessmen, as you know, are members of the party. And if you're a member of the party, you might get some leeway. But I think that's changed in recent years under Xi Jinping. And certainly Jack Ma, you know, crossed the red line. I don't know whether he quite realized he was doing that in a speech about a year ago in Shanghai where he criticized financial regulators. And then sort of, you know, the whole house came down. He was really out of the company almost from that day onwards. So I think foreigners have less leeway than locals. But I think the lesson of the last year is that there's political risk for anybody in China. It doesn't matter whether you're foreign Chinese, overseas Chinese, whatever. There's a series of red lines, not always visible, that you have to be very careful about crossing.
Mm-hmm. So far, in terms of Jamie Dimon's comments, the reaction from Chinese officials has been muted, and they seem to accept Dimon's apology. What does JP Morgan stand to lose if it falls out of favor with the Chinese government? And from your view, do you think there'll be backlash on JP Morgan?
Look, you're right. The Chinese government has been pretty muted in its response. The spokesman for the foreign ministry, Mr. Zhao Lijian, who's pretty outspoken and not afraid of criticizing people from the podium, really just said he'd noted the apology and he told people to stop hyping the issue. I don't think, by the way, internally, that the ruling party wants to highlight a joke that they're not going to last forever. So that's part of it as well. But look, the one area of China still wants foreign investment. They're still soliciting foreign investment despite problems with the U.S. One area where foreigners have been able to expand in the last 5 years and Chinese regulators have facilitated that is in banking and in funds management. And JP Morgan, you know, is investing heavily in that and they're making some way. So I don't think they want to jeopardize that because Chinese financial markets are becoming amongst the biggest in the world.
Hmm. So in that sense, both sides really stand to benefit if they can maintain cordial relations. If they don't, I suppose, overreact on one side or the other, because if JP Morgan were to pull out, China would lose. But if China back, you know, imposes something on JP Morgan would lose. So it is that kind of interplay there.
Well, maybe. A little bit of that for sure. That's the sort of nicest way of looking at it. But I guess if JP Morgan pulled out, then Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs would benefit. So their competitors might like to see them go. But I don't think China really wants to have a fight over this. Jamie Dimon apologized very quickly. And it's not a big deal in that respect. It's just indicative of the tightrope that foreign companies have to tread on. Mm. But I think it's also true that, you know, China wants to develop its capital markets, and foreigners are useful for that.
Mm. And we mentioned geopolitics. Right now, the U.S.-China rivalry. I suppose from your vantage point, do you see all U.S. businesses being affected by the rivalry? Or is this very dependent on specific sectors and industries? As you mentioned, banking and funds management, they're seeing a boom from the Chinese market. But does that apply to all other sectors of the economy as well?
Look, it doesn't apply to all sectors, but I think in generally speaking, you know, in the last, since Mr. Trump got in and the trade war started, they're still going under President Biden. Many people have waited to see U.S. businesses inside China being targeted for punishment. And that hasn't really happened in a systematic way.
Hmm.
And that's because, China sees value in foreign investment. They're still developing their economy. And also foreign investment in China really plays out very much at the local level. In other words, it's local officials, city officials, provincial leaders who are all trying to get investment into their areas to grow their local economy. And foreigners are very important in that. So foreign investment, in fact, I think has continued to rise in China in recent years. And that's because the government has helped make it so. Now, are some areas targeted? Yes, there are some areas that foreigners can't go into. Data, look what's happening there. There's a backlash against Chinese companies listing overseas because their data is there. So you're going to see Didi, the sort of Uber of China, being pulled off the U.S. stock exchange back into China. And certainly some tech areas and the like that China won't let you invest in. There's a lot of areas that have walled off. But generally speaking, particularly in industrial investment, look at Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got their factory up and running in Shanghai in record time. That's all welcome as far as the Chinese are concerned.
I'm speaking to Richard McGregor, senior fellow at the Lowy Institute. When we come back, the curious case of Chinese tennis player Peng Shuai and its implications for China. BFM 89.9. Hello, if you've just tuned in, this is Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. I'm Shazana, and today I'm speaking to Richard McGregor, senior fellow at the Lowy Institute. Earlier, we were talking about the fallout from comments by Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan, which questioned the longevity of the Chinese Communist Party. But a more sticky issue that's grabbing international attention involves the sports industry, specifically women's tennis. So, Richard, why is the well-being of tennis player Peng Shuai gaining so much attention? I mean, this isn't the first time that sports has gained negative press. I think the NBA made headlines last year or the year before regarding comments that some players have made about Hong Kong. But what sets this particular issue apart from other controversies in China involving sports?
Well, I think it's a particular issue which combines many things. It's a high-profile international Chinese sports player, you know, a very successful tennis player, as Ms. Peng is. It's the Me Too movement around the world. It combines top-level Chinese politics and the like.
Mm.
And it's also something that most people can immediately understand, that a woman who made a complaint about, sexual harassment, frankly worse, being forced to sleep with a Politburo member, and the like, in particularly creepy circumstances, suddenly, instead of gaining a voice when she makes that complaint, she's kind of disappeared.
Mm.
And so it's that, but plus the fact that all manner of people like, you know, Serena Williams, Novak Djokovic and the like, all made statements in support of her. And I think most importantly, the Women's Tennis Association took a very strong stand. And so it's just a sort of cocktail of issues that, you know, makes it a much more higher profile human rights issue than is generally the case from China, which, as you say, has lots of them.
Yes. And the Women's Tennis Association, as you mentioned, they have taken quite a strong stance on this issue. And in a way that is kind of the outlier, usually, I mean, in contrast with JB Diamond of JP Morgan, who immediately backed down on this, the WTA has continued to question Peng Shuai's whereabouts and casting doubt on the statements purported to be by her. I mean, we know that the WTA is very reliant on the Chinese market and China's investment into the game. So why do you think that it's prepared to rock the boat on this?
Well, you're absolutely right to describe it as an outlier. You know, the Chinese sports market, the Chinese market generally, is, you know, growing in just about every aspect of, you know, commerce, sports or whatever. You looked at some of the coaches, I think, it was the NBA last year. One made a comment in support of Hong Kong protesters, and he was kind of disowned because of the importance of that market, even though the NBA took a stronger stand later. But, you know, most people don't complain because they're going to lose money. Now, the WTA doesn't rely on the Chinese market, but it's becoming more and more important, and it has massive potential. So that's why it's an outlier, because they put what they consider to be principle ahead of their commercial interests. And I think that's what really, frankly, surprised people, because it doesn't happen very much.
Hmm. Do you think that this will be followed by other sports groups, perhaps, or other stakeholders putting principle above profit? Is that a trend that you see likely to continue, or is this really a case of, you know, the circumstances are right? It just seems like you can take that stance in this particular case, but not so much in others.
Frankly, I think it's going to vary. You're going to get individual sports stars who are going to continue to speak out, as you do have in the NBA at the moment, and their teams will probably suffer as a result by losing TV airtime and the like. I think generally profit generally wins over principle, no matter where you are. But I think, you know, we had, I've just forgotten his name, the Turkish soccer player who played for Arsenal, who made statements about the Uyghurs.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he suffered because of that. We've got a rugby player in Australia who's a Muslim who also has made statements in front of about the Uyghurs, Sonny Bill Williams. But he, of course, has no commercial interest in China, whereas soccer players do.
Mm.
So I think it's going to be very patchy and variable.
Mm.
But I still think the allure of the Chinese market is probably the, you know, greatest dynamic in all of this.
What do you think? Will this have any impact on China's hosting of the Winter Olympics in February next year? I mean, do you think we'll see any fallout from the numerous human rights accusations against Beijing?
Well, we're still waiting to see that. We're not going to get an athletes boycott, so it's not going to be like the 1980 Olympics in Moscow, which the US did boycott.
Mm.
It's whether you get what they call a diplomatic boycott, where you, in other words, you don't see dignitaries there. Now, I think the US has already said they won't do that. I think other countries are debating it. And I think most countries would be reluctant to have a total diplomatic boycott because they might just send somebody of a lower rank. And just to give you an example of the sort of dilemma, I'll give you an example from Australia. Mm. Brisbane is going to host the 2032 Olympic Games. So I don't think many people in Australia want to sort of jeopardize that in the future by creating a massive fuss over the Winter Olympics.
Mm.
So that's the sort of dilemma that people are under. But, you know, the other thing on this, to finally on this point, is that it is so difficult to get in and out of China these days that you're not going to have many people who will want to go anyway, particularly if they've got to do quarantine. So the Chinese aren't making it easy no matter what.
Mm-hmm. So they're keeping the Olympics a very contained affair in any case. Can we take a look at how the CCP is responding to negative press? Is denial the main modus operandi for them, especially if it comes from international sources?
I don't know. I think it's a little bit different depending on what press you look at. I think they've given up on the Western press in a way. They think, I'm not agreeing with this, by the way, that they get perennially negative coverage, and what's the point? I think the soft power sort of investments that China's made into their TV stations and the like don't really pay dividends in the West. But if you go to places in Africa, in Pakistan, perhaps in Latin America as well, then I think the Chinese are probably making a lot more progress than many people like to acknowledge. And then, of course, there's the Chinese language press in overseas Chinese communities, in Malaysia, frankly, in Australia, in Indonesia, in Thailand, where I think the Chinese government, the CCP, is pretty successful in making sure that it dominates the message.
Okay, so it, in that strategy, it is making some headway in at least swaying perceptions towards its end. Can we maybe end the conversation, Richard, with a discussion of what's next for the CCP? We know that the CCP concluded its sixth plenum this month. What clues does this give us in terms of the direction that Beijing is going for? Will we see more? I mean, how long will we see President Xi Jinping in power, essentially? And is that necessarily a bad thing?
Well, the whether it's a good or bad thing, you know, I don't really have a view on that. But I'll tell you what's going to happen. You know, in democracies, we have an election season. In China, they have a selection season. And we've entered that in China now. They have a party congress once every 5 years, which chooses the top leaders. They're going to have their next one in October, November next year. The sixth plenum, which you mentioned, has really laid the groundwork for that, and it's the ground for that, and it's laid the foundation for Xi to get a third term as head of the party, as head of state, and as head of the military. And that's in recent times. You know, he's unwinding a lot of rules to get that to continue stay in office. Now, whether or not he's good or bad, I think there are many people in China who are furious about this because he's effectively unwinding all manner of efforts that people within the party, not people wanting a liberal democracy in China, but people within the party have made to make sure China has a stable transition leadership. That's gone out the window. You know, I think that'll be dangerous later on in China.
All right. Richard, thanks very much for your insights. I'm sure we'll have more conversations with you on what happens next with the CCP. I've been speaking to Richard McGregor, Senior Fellow at the Lowy Institute. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.